So what shall we look at this evening?
I have a couple things that I'm noticing. The first one is I had a really connected day with my son, who's 16 and not usually available for a connection with me.
Mm-hmm.
And we played the piano together. He's teaching me piano, and he went to Costco with me, which he always declines to do. And so it was just this like thing after thing where we were just engaged in conversation, and he was enjoying my company enough to hang around me for several hours at a time. And internally, I was like, "Don't get too excited. Don't let on that you're like really enjoying this, because you might, you know, like a cat, like you might scare him away and like go back to his room or whatever." And it's something that I've been, you know, over time, like he's just moving away from me, and I've been missing and wanting connection with him. And I thought it was interesting to notice that I had this experience with him, and then he went to go to swim with his friends, and I immediately started. Okay, hold on. I noticed.
I can count.
I noticed some voices coming into my head that said things like, "Well, you know what they say, right? Like, it's hard to even say out loud because it feels so mean. Right before someone kills themselves, people say that they changed all of a sudden and had a change in behavior." And my son is not suicidal or depressed. He's an apathetic teenager. This is what I've been reassured about. But the voices were like, "Yeah, this is probably, I wonder what caused, why is all of a sudden he being, there's something suspicious about this," and like, and it was just this immediate, like, boom. And so I'm noticing that that's there. And I spoke it out loud at home, and, you know, my partner kind of laughed, and then I was like, "Okay, we're laughing about it, okay, ha ha ha." It feels so, in the moment, it's so easy for me to get hooked in that, especially when it comes to my son. It's like, that's the place to get me, if you're really trying to get me.
Yeah. May I say something about
yes.
that?
Yes.
Because I think part of what we're doing in awareness practice is to reveal how ego operates,
mm-hmm.
right? And we learn how ego operates by what it does to us on a content level.
Mm-hmm.
So here you are, having a really good time with your son, and you're watching. You're watching how, in that expanded awareness of connection, which isn't familiar for you.
Right.
And so just on that topic, we'll come back to that, right? And so then he leaves, and then it comes in right there in order to make you feel bad.
Yeah.
Right? And so to know that so in watching your experience, you can also see what ego does,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is, if it allows you to have all of this energy, because in this being present with your son, there wasn't an opportunity for it. It could have, right? It could have come in and said, "Oh, you know, you're not having a good time," or "haha." But at some level, having a connection with your son is a way to build the energy up. Right? So there's a lot of energy that's available, life energy. And so then when the life energy gets built, the circumstance that's building the energy goes, and then it just siphons it out with, "Oh, he's going to kill himself."
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now all of the energy is with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so just for us to notice in that awareness practice how the process of ego works, rather than it's all about, as you said, you.
Mm-hmm.
It's farming your energy,
mm-hmm.
basically,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you can now know that when you're high energy, it's not there. And sometimes if you do have high energy, it's a setup for
right.
for that energy to be harvested by that process.
Mm.
It's a feeding process,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you can choose not to let that happen. Because now you know that here I am having connection, and I'm speaking it out, we're laughing about it, so the energy doesn't dissipate into it being inside, taking it from you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's useful to note how ego does it, because then you know what's going on.
Yeah.
You won't have to believe that it's about your son and something going to happen to him.
Right.
The content does not become believable if you can recognize the process that's operating you.
Right. Well, and even during, there was those, you know, I noticed, like, oh, isn't that interesting that there's something is wanting to pull me out of this experience to judge my behavior and make sure I, you know, don't get too excited or to modulate me to fit into this thing that is just happening right now.
Yeah.
And I know good and well that it could be different tomorrow. It was different yesterday. Like, that's just the nature of raising a teenage child.
And, right. And that's another important piece to note, right?
Yeah.
That part of what it's always trying to do is to pull us away from the experience.
Mm-hmm.
But you said something about it went out of my head. It'll come back.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing a lot. I've been working on two-handed recordings, specifically around my relationship with my son, and I'm finding it very difficult. Surprise, surprise. It's difficult. One of the things that's difficult is. And this seems sort of like a logistical thing, just like how to go back and not... I don't want to go back and listen to all the right hands. I just want to go back and listen to the left hands. And I find that's a little tricky to know, like, to get to.
Let me say something.
Yeah. Again.
So the thing to do would be to do a right hand with the person who does not want to listen.
Oh.
Why is that?
Oh.
And listen to that.
Okay.
That's it. Because there's something that's going on for someone that this is painful.
Yeah.
Or just, I don't know, we'll have to find out.
Right. Okay.
There's as soon as you know resistance, just pick up the recorder in the right hand and record about the resistance. Because you're not, there's so many layers of ego and survival and pain and whatever that's not confronted. Right? That's one of the reasons you don't want to listen. Nobody wants to listen to the right hand. Because our survival has been based on not listening to any surviving situations. Not listening to the pain in the situation. Not being face to face with that, whatever it is that's going on, that it's too horrible to confront.
Mm-hmm.
And so, just pick up the right hand and talk from the perspective of, no, I don't feel like it. And then you'll find out why she doesn't feel like it, right? But she's the person who you're going to find, bring into acceptance
mm-hmm.
before something here will be able to listen to those recordings.
Okay.
Yeah? Give that a shot and see. And you know, just be very patient with her.
Yeah, and my Zen awareness coach also suggested doing... like sprinkling left-handed recordings just where, and they don't have to be left-handed recordings, but shorter sprinkles throughout the day where I could, you know, I don't have to, what I noticed is that when my emotions were running really high, it was fairly easy for me to pick up the recorder and start doing my thing, but I don't want to wait, and so it's kind of like waiting until your two-year-old has a meltdown before you're like, oh, they're ready for a nap, and they need to eat, and they haven't, you know, play with another kid or whatever it is, but I don't want to wait till she's that far gone before I tend to her.
Yes.
So that's something that I've been practicing.
And so you could do the two-handed recording anytime, anywhere, with whoever is there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, one of the best two-handed recordings to do is when you're having a really good time.
Oh.
Right? Because you're tired. Because that needs to be witnessed too.
Oh,
somebody's
okay.
Very happy for you.
Okay.
Right? And so then you get to practice the movement of listening to this joyful person. And what that compassion, what we get used to is that the compassion doesn't care about whether someone's having a good time or not. It's not hard for compassion to listen to something that's hard. It's only hard for ego to listen to something that's hard. Because it doesn't have any compassion. Right?
Right?
So all that not wanting to listen is resistance. It's not what wants to listen. That's what you're tuning into. I don't want to listen to this. I don't know why. I don't care why. But I don't want to listen to this. And that attitude of judgment and dismissal and rejection and denial is what she's been hearing from the survival system all this time.
Alright.
And the thing that it came back to me, it's absolutely true that the suffering happens around content that we will fall for.
Yeah.
You know? So Sherry will often say, just imagine if you woke up in somebody else's body, right? What's going on for them or what means something to them isn't something that affects you the least. But we are always made to suffer over what we love. Mm. That's just the way ego operates. Because you'll fall for it. It's only what you care about that you would have a concern about.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Jen.
That was so helpful because I hadn't seen that two-handed recordings. I mean, I record at different times, but the two-handed has been maintained when there is a challenge.
Mm.
Not when there's joy and happiness. And it just made me, it just sort of created this picture of, well, there's not as much space for the joy and happiness then. Mm-hmm. In that, if what's being recognized or looked for, however we frame that, is the challenge versus the wonder and miracle, so that I just love that.
Mm-hmm. It's my favorite thing to do.
I haven't done it. It's like I do it, but I don't do it as a two-handed recording.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it opens it up to the left hand, that part of us embracing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or in another way of saying that, right, Jan, is for us to start to recognize that the compassion, the wisdom, love, and compassion animating that is present to everything in a human experience.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because when we're identified with joy and we record from that place, there's an identification with the joy recording from that place. So when you listen to it, you're listening to that. But there's a way in which, so it's that last, what do you call it, the last step where you listen back to the left hand. Because it's only when you listen back to the left hand that you own the projection of the left hand.
You mean of the right hand? The projection of the left hand. Yes.
That's right. Yes. So when compassion responds, if we're identified with that compassion, we don't recognize, there's no disidentified owning of the projection of the left hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because how do we know that the Buddha is what we are unless we listen to ourselves as the Buddha?
But it seems, so what, if I'm hearing that right, so that Buddhahood, so to speak, is being expressed. And it's being acknowledged here.
Yeah, in the listening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because not only does the person who needs to hear it hear the wisdom, but wisdom sees wisdom.
It's what just dropped in is it's like creating another relationship.
Yes, exactly so. Yeah. So we create all kinds of relationships
right.
in that exercise, right?
Right.
We create relationships to processes that we need to access.
Yeah.
We create relationships between a human being and something that loves that human being. We create the relationship between a reflection between wisdom and wisdom. And so it's a way of getting to know all of the aspects of intelligence that animate this form.
Yeah.
In all flavors.
All flavors. I mean, it's one of the many reasons I love coming here is that there's always something more. I mean, that I'm going to see something more to look at and practice with mm-hmm. in the most wonderful way.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Michael.
I'm enjoying this very rich conversation. And I notice, I definitely when things go wrong, I will grab the recorder and talk. And I think often when things go well also, but it's definitely, I don't know if I'm biased, but it's a definite support for when things are difficult to go for it.
I mean, that's so good, Michael.
Yes, that is good.
It's so good.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because there's a way in which you get it out of the hands of ego mm-hmm. by getting it onto the core.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the first step to save the human.
Yes. And the other thing I noticed, I think with two-handed recording, and maybe in other places too, that it's when things are particularly difficult or karmic or that I have trouble hearing the recording. Like ego, I guess, well, first place doesn't want to talk about it, but then doesn't want to listen to it either.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the beauty of modern technology and recording is I just rewind or play over. So it's interesting to see that.
Yeah, that if I'm hearing what you're saying, if there's a lot of emotion, it is so hard to hear. It's hard not to be distracted by the mm-hmm. sensations mm-hmm. of the body and mm-hmm. the story and all of that.
Yeah.
And it's just good to notice that. To mm-hmm. me, it just says record more on the right hand.
Oh, right. Oh, interesting. Uh-huh.
Right? Because there's a way in which...
To record about that.
Yeah, just keep
that
recording.
I can't listen.
I can't listen. And so I'm distracted. I really can't pay attention right now.
Uh-huh.
There's too much emotion going on, and here's what I'm feeling about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At some point, you could do a bunch of right-handed recordings before you put the recorder in your left hand and listen to it.
And I remember, I think it was during Zen Awareness Coaching once, and maybe it was when we were doing the two-handed recording, and or maybe it was another part of the curriculum. But I said something to my coach that to me was more like, I don't know, truth or reality. And the coach said, well, that's another voice, or that's another... I was just like, it was really good because it helped me to just get a broader perspective on everything. It's like I don't know if I can... it's almost like I was coming to some conclusion or something.
Oh.
And the coach said, okay, so put that down on your recording also, or your...
Stickies.
The post-it process map. So it was just interesting for me to see almost like... sort of don't believe anything, but pay attention to everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all.
Yeah. Do you have an example of a one of those truths?
Let's see. Nothing comes to mind right in this moment.
Mm-hmm. So there's a sense of someone having a conclusion about a narrative. Is that...
Sort of.
Yeah,
I guess so.
Yeah, and so, is that so too?
Yes, exactly.
Mm.
Yeah, is that so also? So it's good.
Yeah. It's always in that place of inquiry.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that occurred to me tonight when I got here is that we have this beautiful place to practice, and I come, and I... one of the year, and it's a miracle every time
it is
that we're all here. Mm-hmm. That,
it truly is. We make the place.
Yeah, we do make the place. And
because if we weren't here, there would be no reason for this
place. Right.
Right?
Yeah.
The assumption is that the place is here because people want the place.
Yeah, that practice exists, and that mm-hmm. I somehow learned about it, and that I want to do it, and that other people want to do it, and... I need sangha, and I'm glad that other people show up.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I think it was impermanence, right, that Mark was talking about this morning.
Yes.
That we're always ready for changes in form.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then, you know, we're met with what we need.
Mm-hmm. Can you say more about that?
Oh, just that I think Sherry writes at the end of that book, the guidelines booklet, that as long as practice is, serves and is desired, it will exist.
Right.
And so it's such a beautiful reciprocity between that which is sought and that which is seeking.
Mm-hmm.
Those tend to come together, perhaps not always in the shapes we imagine or the
right.
forms we imagine.
Right.
But they're always, that process is always happening.
Yes, yes. And I don't know if it's in that guidelines booklet or somewhere else, that, you know, if not enough of us want to do practice anymore, then we will do something else.
Exactly.
So it's like, well, I want practice to be here, so I'm going to come because I need it.
Yeah, we all do, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey.
I'm just so happy to be here. And yes, I love that. Like, just that it is such a miracle, and I don't live in state, so I get down here for work every so often, and I hadn't been to this new beautiful home for Center, and it...
I hope you get to come on Sunday and see the beautiful garden.
I can't, I'm leaving tomorrow, sadly, but there will be more.
Good.
It feels so much like home, and I, you know, to not have been here before, and to still have that tenderness of walking in the room and having the practice be here.
Yes. Well, and I don't know if this is what I'm projecting this, but there's a way in which a meditation hall with black sadhus and sadhutans and a certain, there's a certain aura of practice that you walk into and you recognize, right? Plants and, you know, it's really well laid out and wooden floors and, you know, it's there's a way in which our heart recognizes the attributes of practice wherever practice happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is that sense of coming home because I project it's always about recognition.
Mm-hmm.
You recognize your teacher, you recognize your practice, you recognize your heart when something external reflects that.
Yeah.
It's very joyful.
It is, and I'm feeling really moved because it's been a challenging content-wise the last few months for me, and I've been practicing, but there's sort of a distance that I've felt in practice, and it's just the being here physically is just really making a difference, and everything's sinking in. And
Say more about the distance. Just more voices?
Yeah, let me try to articulate it. So oftentimes it feels like, especially now after practicing a number of years, often it feels like the voices kind of go underground.
Mm.
Because when I'm hearing them, they're not as believable, unless it's something really big and really identified. But what's been going on for me recently has been just a very busy work time, fatigue. Mm-hmm. And so there's, it feels not totally identified, but not quite at center.
Mm,
And like I can tell that, there's a little bit of, a little less softness, and it's just there's not as much compassion there. And I have the often what will happen to me is that I kind of move out of the body.
Mm.
when that happens, and it's my, I'm much more in the head, and so it just, it feels a little bit like not at center, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. So
even though I'm still able to observe some of it happening.
Yes. Yeah. The I project what you're talking about is our sense of well-being is we can sense our own distance from our center.
Yes.
Right. That's what I project. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing, and it's a very sort of unstable place because we recognize the distance and how vulnerable we are because we can't do the things that take care of us to get back there. It's just too busy.
Yeah.
It's a very painful place.
It is. Mm-hmm. And I think there's also that recognition of how painful it is. Mm-hmm. And so there's a little bit of not fully recognizing that and seeing it, because it sort of separates a little from that as well, to not be in the pain.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if this is helpful, Kate. I find those times really, really helpful and really, really useful, because it sort of highlights for me what I'm up against, that in those places the priority is still to the busyness, not to the human being. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's part of the pain. If you're used to a relationship of love towards this human being, you can sense the separation, and you can also sense that the pain of not being able to have that attentiveness. And that's ego's really, that's an interesting ego place, right? Because mm-hmm. it won't let you do it.
Yes.
Only because we've been so conditioned to cope so well.
Yeah, that's so true, yeah.
Right? It's like, no, I have a cold, I'm going to pop a couple of Advil and push my body to getting this done, because in that world that we don't see, that is really important. Mm-hmm. I can't let anyone else down. I can't let my staff down. I can't let my obligations down. I can't let, And that's the conditioning of the good, right person, while your heart's breaking in the middle of it all, because the person who's being left out is this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that really explains it. One other thing dropped in as you were saying that, which was, let me see if I might have lost it. Oh, so then what happens is then the ego plan on how to fix it comes in.
Oh my God. Yeah, right. And so, now you have a plan for me. Yeah.
Right. And what this conversation so far really, I mean, just the idea of the two-handed recording with joyful things just felt like the gift that I need right now. And that I don't, it doesn't, all the recordings don't have to be how I'm struggling right now. Like they can, because those other moments are happening.
Mm-hmm.
But just,
yes.
You know, the attention is, it would be great to bring more attention to those.
Yeah.
And so that's something I'm definitely going to take away.
Yeah. My practice lately has been just this moment. Mm-hmm. Because part of, if we're coming off this time of high emotion and lots of transformation and letting go and identification and all of that, there's such a temptation when we come, when the wave hits the shore, of looking back and wanting to process it all, right? Mm-hmm. and sort of, there's a way in which when it's time for that to be available in your recordings, it will be, if it needs to be. Because if you weren't processing through it while you're going through it, then now you just have what is here. You don't have to bring that all in this moment.
Right.
Right? And this is what fascinates me about practice, is because the intelligence knows. It knows when I have to reach the recorder in the middle of my day where everything is going badly. And it knows when I'm at the end of the day when I need to be focusing on joy. And it knows when I need to really spend an hour and a half processing what it is that I went through that I never looked at in the last 6 weeks. It's all there, appropriately.
And you said just this moment, is that the...
Yeah, just this... So there's a way in which the conversation is going to drag that altercation I had that has tainted my, or made me sad for the last 3.5-4 days. And so when I finally get here to have my cup of tea in front of the garden with that rose, it's going to start to try to bring that moment in, right? Mm-hmm. So that I can now be in the sadness and look at the sadness and what it meant. And in this moment, I'm having tea with the rose. Yeah. I can record that. Because those moments never get recorded.
I know. I'm going to borrow this, just this moment.
Yeah. 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 Just this moment. In this moment, all that's there. I can handle this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is so true.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Jen?
I was just appreciating, again, the... it's both the simplicity and the subtleties of the subtleties of how conditioning seeps in.
Oh, yeah.
And I know I've been experiencing it lately. I mean, it's sort of like the slide. And I can tell, but it's sort of like it's so smooth. I don't know the way to describe it. It's so smooth I can't identify it. And yet when I hear the simplicity of practice, like, just this moment, just this moment, right now, right here, that's all that's needed.
Yeah.
And if at some point I recognize the slide in this moment, just this moment, great. I think that's what you're pointing to.
Yes.
Yeah, that, but conditioning wants me really to focus, if not be absorbed by it and go with it, to be trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just... this is
the next Musings article.
The what?
It's the next Musings article, Jen.
Oh, good.
It's what Sherry was talking about. To do, you know, are you practicing or are you doing practice?
Wait a minute. Practicing or doing practice?
Because it's what we talk about. That place of... that seep into... So sometimes we're just identified and you don't know it. That happens to all of us. And then we watch ourselves get identified.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. But we don't... in the watching of the identification, we don't redirect.
Well, we can...
we can, but we don't.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
What I'm talking about, that there's a way in which the awareness is collapsing as we're watching the conditioning, right?
Uh-huh. So if I'm understanding what you're saying, so I'm watching this happen, I'm the slide, but I'm not focused on what's here just this moment.
Yes, because...
the rose, the whatever it is.
Yes, because I think what we get very good at early on in practice is noticing conditioning.
Yeah. And that can be a habit.
It can become a habit.
We've talked about that.
Right.
Know, but
and then, so yeah. That's why we want to do two-handed recordings that are joyful, or listen to roses with tea with roses moments. Because we have to break the habit of being fascinated by what conditioning is doing.
Right. Right. And that joyful recording that will then be acknowledged it just reinforces it over and over again.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean not to record when there is terrific hurt or confusion or anger, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost holographic, right? Because as we practice, we are dealing with things on many levels. Always. We're dealing with the suffering. We're dealing with the ego. So the suffering of the human being, the ego, the context of awareness. You know, it depends. Wherever we are, somewhere or the other, something is being transformed at some level. Mm-hmm. And we're always practicing at all those levels. But it's like I can hit a great forehand, but my backhand is not very good. So if I know that, I need to shore up my backhand some more. And so if I have a great relationship with awareness, being able to see conditioned mind, and I need to develop my awareness in relationship with awareness, then that's where I want to put my attention.
Yeah. And so the recording, I mean, as an example, the recordings in all realms.
Yes, the recordings in all, that's great, recordings in all realms.
Yeah.
And you know, it depends on where we are in practice. If I am having a really, really hard time doing recordings on emptiness, I mean, listening to my recording is not available to me. Forget listening to tea with roses, right?
I don't know, just lately for me, what's been coming up is just the subtleties. And so when I hear them, it's almost like the antenna is out for those subtleties. But what I'm getting from the conversation tonight is, I really don't, well, tell me if this thing's true, I don't need to go to the subtleties of condition, what conditioning is doing. I just want to focus on what the heart wants.
Yes. Or we could say you want to do both. It's an and. It's a two-step. Right? Because if we're paying such close attention that we can tell when the conditioning is subtle and nuanced. Mm-hmm. And that subtlety, that subtle receptor can also pick up the wonder of awareness. I mean, the only reason you can be aware of conditioning at that subtlety is not just because you're paying attention, but because you're aware. But we can't forget to do that last step of the two-handed recording exercise in every act of noticing, which is the identification with that which notices.
Which is the left-handed recording.
Which is listening to the left-handed recording.
Oh.
Right? So here I am, and awareness notices that really subtle way in which conditioning is. And if the narrative is, I just worked out conditioning, worked out what conditioning did, rather than that was the subtlety of awareness.
Yeah.
There's a way in which we've just given the game to conditioned mind.
So it includes it all.
It includes it all.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I said that about not paying attention to this, so it wasn't really right, but I was trying to get,
The point is the only reason I noticed is that the subtlety of conditioning is noticed is because awareness is paying attention is on awareness.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Otherwise, there wouldn't be any noticing. So we just have to celebrate that we are the awareness that notices.
Right. Oh, it's all so good.
It's all so good. Because if nothing was to change.
No, that's actually the point, in a way. Mm-hmm. Just embracing all of it. Acknowledging it for what it is and embracing that,
here's my experience. The deeper our practice, the more subtle our practice, it feels like the more joy is there in the subtlety. Mm. Right? Because what we're paying attention to changes.
So what you mean is it's getting more subtle. I mean, it's getting more nuanced. It's getting
more, yes. That is sort of, at least it's my experience, that intelligence is very, very specific. It's very, very nuanced. And we just delight in all of the things that it can notice.
Is that, that's what you mean by
that's
that?
What I mean.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure I got that. Yes, no, it's the light in every single thing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Can you say, I just want to make sure I understood what you just said, and I'm wondering if you might be able to say it slightly in a different way, but the part about the fourth step and acknowledging awareness.
Mm-hmm. So, when we teach the traumatic recording, there are two things that the fourth step is a part of, right? So here I am, I am talking about what's painful for me, right? And you're listening to it. Mm-hmm. And then you get to talk to me about what it is that arises for you in response to what is painful for me. And then I hear that. Mm-hmm. Right? And so the only way I can hear that in a two-handed recording exercise is if I play the recording back from the left hand. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's a way in which, let me back up. For the human being who's in pain to be comforted, reassured, encouraged, accepted, validated, you have to listen back to the recording that you made on the left hand. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that hang together mm-hmm. some more? So that's one of the reasons you listen to the left-handed recording, because you re-identify with the person in the right hand who needs to hear it. Mm-hmm. There's also a way in which if you allow it, you can focus your attention on one or the other, listen to it the second time, is when you're listening to it, what is also happening is you're witnessing the wisdom that is you. Mm-hmm. You're not just identifying with the human that's in pain. Because when the wisdom is talking, the wisdom is talking. When the human being in pain is talking, the human being in pain is talking. There's no reflection there for either of them. There is a reflection of the human being when you listen to the right hand, mm-hmm. and then the left hand speaks. And then there's a reflection of listening to the left hand when you listen to the left hand, both from the human's perspective and just reflective of the wisdom. Because otherwise, how do we know we're being transformed from that which needs to be mentored to that which is mentoring? We don't encounter the Buddha within otherwise. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's that sort of that moment of when you're listening to that, and it's I often have that experience of wow, where did that come from? And yeah. You know, just
that's right. Yeah, where did okay. that come from? And what we do is stop at the where did that come from, which is great. But if the awareness is expanded, there's some way of recognizing and owning that projection. It did come from
right.
the intelligence that animates. And we're so conditioned not to step into the light that is us. Mm-hmm. Because if I went around identifying with the intelligence that animates, I'm told I would be an egomaniac with suffering from megalomania, right? I'm God. But that's not what we're talking about, right? But we're never allowed to move into what would it be like if we could inhabit the fact that we are the intelligence, the way that Sherry says it, the intelligence that animates is animating, that thou art. What would that look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even where did that come from is this not me.
That's right.
Place.
Which is good, because it's the not me is, it's definitely not ego.
Right. Not that me.
Not that me. That's right. And not me in that place of there's nothing, it's not even the human dimension. It's a recognition of a dimension that is not those things. Mm-hmm. But it's extremely real. It's the identification with authenticity or true nature.
Yeah. And all, maybe? Like just
yeah, all. Whatever we might want to call it, whatever that experience is what that process points to. Right?
Okay. Thank you.
It's a good place to practice. I mean, it's like the hardest scale to practice in a piece, in a piano piece. It would be the scale of identification with divinity itself. Right?
Yeah.
But we practice all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is not available through accessing it. And then you get to deal, you work with all the, you have to be humble, you can't be, what if it isn't always there? And what would you do if you don't have your humility, or what would happen if you didn't get punished, or whatever that shows up, that's the obstacle to all of the barriers falling.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Adam.
So, I just want to, I've been working so hard to track everything that's being said.
It's on the recorder. You can you can just download the and listen to it again, but go ahead.
So something came to me that I thought maybe, and if you haven't seen Harry Potter, my analogy
I have watched all of them.
Okay.
And so read all of them many times.
Great. So then what it sounds like you're saying is like when Harry Potter conjures the Patronus, but he doesn't know that he did it, and later he knows he can do it because he did it earlier.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm
well, not quite.
Okay.
Because that was with time machines and things.
Right.
Right? But it is a way in which, so what would be a better analogy for a Harry Potter thing is, I don't know if you remember when he's in the Ministry of Magic, mm-hmm. in the last play, in the Order of the Phoenix, mm-hmm. when Dumbledore tells him, relate to what, to not what, how you're like Voldemort.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That where Harry is, where the war is fought is, there is an aspect of you that is Voldemort. And there's an aspect of you that isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because all of our focus is on this is what, this is the negativeness is what you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's who you are. Not all of that goodness that can, that is also what you are, that loves, that is friend, has friends, and has beautiful moments, and loves your uncle, and all of those parts of you.
Mm-hmm.
There is the goodness from which the Patronus arrives,
mm-hmm.
which we don't identify with. Anyone else before we go?